Okay. Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. I'd like to again take this opportunity to thank the St. Louis Kollel and the Vadeir for jointly sponsoring this year. As we said last time, that this year really for the Vadeir is dedicated for the Mashkichim, and it's always amazing that they are able to come together and join with me, and we usually discuss topics of contemporary kashrus issues that are coming up. For Pesach, we branched out a little bit, and now we're going to discuss tonight. Last time we discussed the sugya of bittul and biur chametz, and tonight I'd like to focus primarily on the discussion of mechiras chametz. We're all familiar with a pretty simple procedure from a consumer perspective. We go to the rabbi's office, we sign our name, we walk out, and all we know is that our chametz is sold. But we're going to try to go a little bit behind the scenes tonight and understand exactly how that's happening, how that's working, and get a little into the lumdus of what's going on. Really, a few years back, I gave a shiur entitled Mechiras Chametz, Is It Really Sold? And tonight is a takeoff of that shiur, plus hopefully a little more. And so it was refreshing. It was a refresher for me, and I hope you'll enjoy it as well. So I'll start off with the shiloh.
Still trying to find out if it's been sold.
Okay, still fine. Well, hopefully by tonight we'll have the answer. Let's see. So we're going to start off in part number one. We'll start off with the Shailu Meshiv. He was posed the following question. It's an interesting question until he ends off the question saying, well, I know this really didn't happen, but I'll discuss it anyway. But here is a question that someone asked him, and then he said it wasn't a true case, but I think it was interesting nonetheless.
Who is this?
The Shailu Meshiv is Rav Yosef Shol Natanzin. He was the Rav in Lemberg, Lvov, in the early 1800s. Tremendous author, prolific author, wrote thousands of tshuvas. And from, you know, answered questions from all across Europe. And I'll just paraphrase the question, but I put it down here if you want to look at it inside. The question was as follows. He had a nice yid, we'll call him Ruvain, and he goes to the Rav, or he sells his chametz before Pesach, does the whole transaction, no problem, everything is sold, and unfortunately during Chol HaMoed Pesach, he passes away. Okay, and he sold, for argument's sake, $1 million worth of schnapps. He owned the schnapps, local schnapps company. He sells off $1 million worth of merchandise before Pesach. Chol HaMoed Pesach, he has a heart attack, and now he's no longer with us. He has two sons. We'll call them Shimon and Levi. Shimon is the Bechor, and Levi is the second son. So Shimon turns to Levi during Chol HaMoed. Now, keep in mind, there's no shiv or anything yet, right? There, during Chol HaMoed. But Shimon turns to Levi and says, you know, I'm the Bechor, so after Pesach, I'm going to get double of what you get, right? So if you have $1 million, that's break into three parts, even though the two sons, but you break into three, and the Bechor is going to take two-thirds, and the regular son will take one-third. So Shimon tells his brother, I'm the Bechor, after Pesach I'll get two-thirds, you'll get one-third, isn't that great, I'm the Bechor. And Levi says, well, it could be you're the Bechor, but I know the halacha. And the halacha is that even though a Bechor takes double portion of the Yerusha, but that's only in things which were in liquid state, that's a pun intended, liquid state at the time of the death of the parent. The money, the whiskey wasn't owned by our father at the time he died. When our father died, who owned the whiskey? The guy. It's only coming back into our rishus if the guy sells it back to us after chametz. That's called in halacha and gemara, it's called ro'i, things that are coming later on. Things that are only coming later on down the line, the Bechor doesn't get pishnayim. For a modern day example, let's say someone bought a CD and it matures in 15 months. He passes away 1 month into the CD, so it's 14 months till the CD matures. At maturity date, the family comes, the inheritors, and they say they want to take the money that was in the CD. So even if there's a Bechor there, the Bechor, the firstborn son, will not get double his portion. He'd only get a single portion like the rest of the inheritors because that's considered ro'i, because it wasn't accessible, it wasn't real liquid cash at the time of the father's death. So again, here you have the case where the guy sells his chametz before Pesach. He dies during Chol HaMoed, there's $1 million worth of chametz. After Pesach, the two brothers, the two sons, get it back. And the Bechor wants to take pishnayim, wants to take his double portion. And the other son only says no, you can't take the double portion because it was sold. We should split it 50-50. You get $500,000, I get $500,000. Doesn't want to end up with $250,000. Wants to end up with $500,000. So they go to the Rav and they ask, what's the halacha? Was it considered out of our father's rishus? Which seemingly it should have been, because if it would have been his rishus, like we spoke about last time, that's bayi ra and bayi matzeh. That's a pretty serious transgression. Two lavim in the Torah, at least. It's Asa B'Hanam Midrabanan, Chamat Shalva Pesach, if it wasn't sold, it's Asa B'Hanam Midrabanan, we said last time, so what's the halacha? Okay, so before we get to the bottom line, let's first give a little backdrop and get to the understanding and the discussion of as we spoke about last, we'll just recap quickly, there are numerous Isurim regarding chametz. Like we said, there's Bayi Ra, Bayi Matzeh, those are the two big lavim of not having any chametz in our possession which is accessible and could be seen or could be found. There's tashbisu, that's the positive mitzvah to get rid of the chametz before Pesach. So automatically, usually by being over, by transgressing by Iram, by Imatzah, you're also transgressing tashbisu because you didn't get rid of your chametz properly. And then of course, it's the prohibitions of eating chametz or eating any mixture of chametz on Pesach, which that is punishable by kareis. So chametz is very severe, as we know. And we spoke about last time the mitzvah min haTorah to destroy the chametz, tashbisu, and the mitzvah midrabanan to search for all the chametz before Pesach. Now, as we all know, we all sell our chametz before Pesach as well. Selling chametz is not a mitzvah min haTorah. It's not even a mitzvah from the Gemara. The Rabbanan never instituted that we all have to sell chametz. Nonetheless, we all are and should be makpid to sell our chametz. So how exactly did that develop? So the earliest source that the Paiskim bring for the idea that of Jews selling their chametz in general before Pesach and getting it back after Pesach, meaning you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out you can just sell your chametz to a guy before Pesach and let him have it forever, right? That's no big kunst. The kunst is you want to sell it to the guy and some have some type of option or possibility of getting it back from him after Pesach if he doesn't want it. So there is a Yerushalmi, which is part number two over here, middle of the page, and the Yerushalmi discusses an interesting case. Yisrael va'akum, there was a Jew and a Gentile, shayuboyim b'svin, they were traveling on a boat, they were at sea. V'chametz b'yad Yisrael, and Pesach comes, and the Jew has chametz in his possession. Now he's on the boat. They don't know, you know, let's make up a little, you know, put in some details here, they don't know when they're going to dock. They might be at sea for another couple of months. If he's going to just throw all those chametz overboard because he wants to destroy all of it, what's he going to eat for the next 2-3 months on the boat? He might not have any food. So what does he do with his chametz? Harezeh moicher la'akum. He can sell it to the guy, says Yerushalmi, oy nosloi b'matana, or give it to the guy as a gift. V'chayzer v'loichay melachar Pesach. And he can come back after Pesach, knock on the guy's door in his cabin, and say, I want to buy it back. U'bilvad, but this is as long as shehinu loy matana gemur, you have to give it to the guy as a full-fledged gift. You know, this is no like, you know, wink of the eye over here, or here's a gift, I'll see you in a week. None of that, you know, none of that insinuating anything like that. If you give it to him as a full-fledged gift, it has to be a real gift, no backsies. Or if you sell it to him, it has to be a fully valid sale. And then the Yerushalmi has another case of if not, they're not on a boat, if a Jew sees a guy walking, let's say, going down to the grocery store, he's about to go buy a box of Cheerios, says, don't buy a box of Cheerios. I have 2 boxes at home. Why don't you buy my boxes from me? And I'll give you a good deal, or come buy it from a Jew, because maybe the Jew tells the guy, maybe after Pesach I'll need this Cheerios and I'll buy it back from you. So I'm selling it to you now full-heartedly, but I have 2 boxes of Cheerios at home. Why don't you buy them? Because maybe after Pesach I'll buy back from you. Again, it's an interesting case, but the deal we're seeing from here is that the guy and the yid are having this transaction before Pesach. The yid is selling it or giving it b'matana to a guy before Pesach. And he's already insinuating some type of understanding that I might want to come get it back from me after Pesach. But it's not a condition. The Yerushalmi says clearly, as long as he's giving it to him for a full-fledged gift or he's selling it full-heartedly. But nonetheless, there could be some idea that I might want to come get it back. You could already plant the seeds that I might want to get this back after Pesach. So this is from the Yerushalmi. The Ritva, who quotes this Yerushalmi in Pesachim, beginning part of the Ritva basically just quotes the Yerushalmi and the Tosefta, really, so the same idea. Where I started underlining it about a little more than halfway down, the Ritva adds a very important caveat. He adds a little ending over here. He says, "Ubilvad shelo yarim." You can't do any trickery. You want to do this sale with the guy, it's legal. You can give it to him as a gift, you can give it to him, but don't do any tricks. Aval, he says, imherim, if the Jew does some type of trick with the guy, v'uragelases kein b'chol hashanim. And what that means is, says Ritva, is that every year, Erev Pesach, Ruvein knocks on his neighbor's door and says, my good guyish neighbor, please buy my chametz for me. Okay, I'll see you in a week. And this goes on year after year after year. Sounds familiar? Right? I think we all heard of this concept. Says Ritva, that's illegal procedure. If your rogalasis came b'chol hashan limko l'goy kodma Pesach, v'lito l'achar Pesach, and to rebuy it after Pesach, Kansinolei, says the Ritva, will give you a fine, will knas you, vu aser loy, the chametz becomes aser to you, ulo kol yisrael acha Pesach. The Ritva takes his license here and says, not only did Chazal say that chametz she'avol av Pesach, chametz which passed over Pesach in the Jews' rishus, becomes aser after Pesach, as the Rabban, like we said last time, now even if a Jew sells it to a guy, but he tells the guy, this is what he does year after year after year, keeps buying it back from the guy, so it's kind of an unspoken stipulation. This is what's going to happen. According to the Ritva, that's illegal, and it should not be repeated. And if he does it, then we will knas, we'll give you a fine, and you will not be able to enjoy that chametz after Pesach, even if you buy it back. So again, Let's say for 10 years or 2 years you did this shtick already, you sold your chametz to a guy, a full-fledged sale, and then, let's say for argument's sake, the third year you do it again, even though you bought it back, you transacted, you had money back and forth, according to the Ritva, at that point, even though you bought the chametz back, it's usser. So you lost your money and you lost your food. Right? Bad deal according to the Ritva. Now, this is obviously not the what we're all familiar with, and the reason for that is because the Beis Yosef on the top of the next page, Beis Yosef on the tour, quotes the Rabbeinu Yerucham, a Rishon, and he says, I'll just read him from the top before it's online, Rabbeinu Yerucham, the last word in the first line, he says, Rabbeinu Yerucham kasav al taisefta zu, and this taisefta, which he also says, Yerushalmi b'shem bahag. So Rabbeinu Yerucham brings the name of Baal Halachas Gedolos from the earliest Rishonim. Ubilvad shalo yarim, he also has this term that the Ritva said, you should also not make a trick, but it's important here to see how he explained it. The Ritva again learned the trick that it means that you shouldn't keep doing it year after year because then it shows that you don't really, not it's not a real sale. The Beis Yosef says the name of the Rabbeinu Yerucham, ve'enai megvin dvarav, I don't understand what that means. Dehashari litnoi la'akom b'matana, I'm allowed to give it to a guy as a gift, ve'lachzar ve'lulkoi achar Pesach, and to go back and get it back after a Pesach, ve'en lacha arama gedoy lemizu. There's no greater trick than that. Meaning, of course, I know it's a trick, but it's legal. If it's legal, it's legal. It's a legal loophole. So says the Rabbeinu Yerucham, what's the problem? It's out of my possession. Where is it? It's in my Goyish neighbor's garage. It's out of my house. This is an important idea. He's saying here, it's not in my house at all. Where's the chametz? Not under my kitchen cabinet somewhere. It's in the guy's garage. It's in the guy's rishus. So says the Rabbeinu Yerucham, it's mutter. The efsher, so suggests Rabbeinu Yerucham at the end, the shalo yarim dekama, when it says you should not make any tricks, what does that mean? Hainu loymer, that means to say, shalo yimkor loy, v'lo yitin loy al tanai. Don't sell to him and make a stipulation or give it to him as a present and give him a specific stipulation that I will buy back from you. Don't worry, if you don't want it, I will for sure buy back to you. Or if you don't want it, you can for sure give it back to me. Don't put any stipulations in the contract. Sell it wholeheartedly, and if the guy self-understands or he just decides by his own to sell it back to you, even if you do this every single year, as long as there's no spoken out condition, no tanai, then according to Rabbeinu Yerucham, it's going to be permissible, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. So that's an introduction so far to how what we call our regular sale that we do. We'll get to more details of it as we go along. But the idea is that this really a machlekes rishonim. According to the Ritva, if you do it year after year, it's not going to be smiled on. It's going to be frowned upon because it looks like a harama, looks like a trick. And according to Rabbeinu Yerucham, it's not a problem because we're giving it to the guy's rishus. Once it's out of the Jews' rishus, and once it enters the guy's rishus, that's not a problem. The only thing the Rabbeinu Yerucham adds that we can't make a stipulation. You can't say specifically when you're selling the guy the chametz or giving the guy the chametz that you're doing it al tanai. Okay, so what we've seen till now, it seems like there's halachic precedence for this idea of a sale, even though again we said the Gemara never says we should do it, and even the Paiskim are discussing it here, not saying this is something that we should do. But this is something that you could do if you have chametz, you need to be sold. You can sell it off before Pesach, and again, as the Shulchan Aruch is passing, you can sell it to the guy or give it to the guy, but matana, as long as you don't make a stipulation in the contract. Now, it's interesting, Rav Zevin Zatzal in the Sefer Hamayidim Bahalacha writes, he says, if you want to see an interesting development of history throughout the Tshuva Svarim, he says, you'll see that if you look in the earlier Tshuva Svarim, many of the shilas that the Rabbanim had are people who had private transactions. There were people who sold privately. Every Jew on his own accord went to his Goyish neighbor and sold his chametz if he wanted to. There was no communal rabbinic sale going on. I have $100 of chametz in my house. I knock on my neighbor's door. The guy, Mr. Akum, and please buy my chametz for me. Or I give him a box of food. Here it is, Mr. Akum, take my food. Have a good day. And I kind of come back a week later. It seems like it was a private affair, so to speak. However, as the generations went on, you see in the Tshuva Svarim, he writes, that it became more of a rabbinic duty that the Rabbanim took care of it. And that has many milas, many benefits for the Rabbanim to take care of it. For us, as we'll soon see, there are numerous nuances of the kinyanim or how the contract is worded that a rabbi will hopefully be well versed in, and that he'll do the contract without any shadow of a doubt in halacha, and he'll cover all bases. But since it's interesting, once this became the minig that the Rabbanim do it for us, there's another minig that developed. The minig is that when a person goes to the Rav for that the Rav should arrange a sale of the chametz, it's important to point out the Rav is not buying your chametz, right? As we always say, the Rav is just being now the agent to sell your chametz. The minhag has become that when you go to the Rav, you give him a couple of dollars, or more than a couple of dollars, you give him some a present for Yontif for helping you sell the chametz. Now, some people think it's just a nice idea. It's nice to give the Rav a couple of extra dollars before Yontif. It's great. It's a nice way to show your appreciation. Maybe you bother him many times during the year. Give him a couple of extra dollars before Pesach. But Rav Moshe Sternberg Shlita writes, this is much more than a minhag. It's become a chayv. It should be an obligation for every person to give the Rav. Now, I don't sell chametz, so it's not a personal appeal. But whoever your personal shul Rav is, says Rav Moshe Sternbach, this should be an idea to give him specifically money when you ask him to do you to help you arrange the sale of chametz. Why? So Rav Moshe Sternbach explains as follows. This is the bottom of page 2 in part number 3. Rav Moshe Sternbach says as follows. He says, first he says, it seems like it's just a nice minhag, like I told you. And then he says, why I underlined it, uladaiti nira she'ein zet tzedakah, it's not just charity, rak midina tzarech adatake, you must give something to the Rav. Law says the Rav ha-meicher chametz kesef avur ha-demeicher, to give him some money, that which he's selling you for you. Why? V'tama davar. The reason for this is as follows, he says. I'm reading where it's underlined in the right column. Sheba MS Kasha, it's hard to understand. Heich mahani, how does it help that we told the Rav to sell the chametz for us? We tell the Rav, make him a shliach, we point him our agent, tell him to sell the chametz. Let's just pause for a minute. We have a principle throughout Shas, chazaka, we have an assumption we're allowed to trust that if I send someone on a shlichus to do a job for me, I can assume he carried out that job. Chazaka, we have a principle that a shliach is a shlichusay. Without getting involved in all the rayas, Rav Moshe Sternbach is suggesting here that only works for things which need to happen a derabbanan. Things which need a chalais, which is going to happen derabbanan, there we have a chazaka shliach oisa shlichusai. If it's a shiloh of a da'araisa, to make sure to know that a da'araisa happened, then I need to verify the shliach did his job. I can't rely on the presumption that the shliach will do his shlichus. So now what do we have here? I own $100 worth of chametz. If I'm going to own it going into Pesach, I'm going to transgress the Daraisa. I'm going to transgress at least 2 Yisurim of Bali Rav Bali Matzeh. So I need to know on the Daraisa level to make sure that the Rav sold the Chametz for me. Now, so one option is, I'll go to him this week, a week before Pesach, ask him to be my Shliach, and then Erev Pesach, 10 o'clock in the morning, the most convenient time, I'll call the Rav and say, Rav, are you sure you sold my Chametz? Did you sell all my chametz? Did you do a good job? I say, yes, I sold your chametz. Hang up the phone. Then the next guy will call him. And from 10 o'clock till Lichtin, the Rav will be answering the phone all day, nonstop, telling everybody, yes, I sold the chametz, because everyone needs to check to make sure that the Rav did his shlichus. So how do we help the Rav not be busy all day picking up the phone and answering the same question over and over again? Says Rav Moshe Sternbach, I'm just skipping to the left paragraph earlier, but it's underlined. Or on the second part of the online over there, after the break, it says, Avol, he says, imedaktek l'shalom l'schar, if you're careful to give the Rav money, dafka, eino shliach, he's not your shliach, but amar rak havi kipoil. Then he becomes your worker. And again, you go through the rayas there. Someone is your worker and you hired him to do a specific job for you, then you don't have to check even on the rayas level if he did it. You're paying him to do the job. When you pay someone to do the job, of course he's doing it. Otherwise, he's a ganef, so to speak, right? So when you give the Rav the money, you're not just giving him a nice tzedakah, a nice nedava, but says Amay Shemach, you're now hiring him to be your agent, not just a shliach, but a payel. And that, therefore, we don't have to call back the Rav on Erev Pesach and bother him and say, you sure you sold my chametz? We can trust that he did. Now, we trust him anyway, technically, but from a halachic standpoint, we want to ensure that it was done properly. So that's why Rav Moshe Sternbach promotes the idea of giving the Rav money before Pesach to ensure he comes now your payel and not just your shliach.
If you did this all, then it ends up being Rabbanan.
Well, if you did, but often we don't want to move out to the chametz we're selling. Because if you do bittul on the chametz you're selling, technically means that it's after the ara. It's interesting, Shaila, I don't want to discuss it right now. Let's say I didn't sell chametz, I just said bittul, and I knew I had chametz, and I was a vatlet. Is there still a kenas there of chametz of a pesach or not? Meaning I knew there's a dozen bagels in my freezer. Right? I put it.
I found them.
I know those. So I say, okay, I'm not going to sell those to the guy. I don't have time to arrange it with the rabbi. I'm not interested in selling my chametz to the rabbi. I'll say, kol chamira. So it's not so partial that after Pesach, I can just go ahead and enjoy those, even though you said kol chamira. Don't get me wrong, you got to say kol chamira. But not automatically is everything just mutter. So that's why we're going to promote everyone to sell their chametz. Okay, but let's just. So at this point, Rav Sternbach is saying that now that it became the minhag, the rabbi is selling it to us, you have to make sure to pay him for his dues. Now, this doesn't talk about, but I was thinking in my I was preparing this. Now, if a Rav has a contract from the shul, and if in the contract of the shul, part of his duties are to arrange the sale of chametz for all the members of his congregation, and you're a paying member to his congregation, then l'chaira, you should be covered and wouldn't have to pay him, especially for selling your chametz. But you have to know what the rabbi's contract says. So consult your local board and see what they write in the shul contract. But either way, it's a good idea. Okay, that's a Moshe Shtermach Shlig. Let's move on. There's other ideas that the Paiskim speak about, which they do here in St. Louis, which is not just that you go to one, we go to one Rav, let's say you go to Rabbi Greenblatt, you go to Rabbi Landy, you go to Rabbi Shulman, you sell your chametz, whoever it is, right? But the Rabbanim get together and they form a Bezdin, and they, together as a Bezdin, they sell their chametz to the Goy. There are numerous milas to that. One of the milas is the Yeshua Smalka, Yeshua Kutno speaks out in the Tshuva, that therefore, once they have a Kayach of a Bezdin, they also have the Kayach to declare Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. As we'll soon see, they're going to do between 5 or 6 kinyanim to make sure that the sale is valid, to cover every single possible problem that might exist in any one of the kinyanim. There's machlekes about each one of the kinyanim. So they'll also do at the end, if you have a bezin, they'll pronounce hefker, bezin, hefker, meaning in case anything we said, any one of the transactions we tried to do didn't work, our last resort will be hefker, bezin, hefker. So that's, you can only do that if you have the power of a bezin. So if you have all the rabbanim, or at least 3 rabbanim coming together, and they're working as the bezin, then they can do that as well. Because when we go to the rav and appoint them as our shliach or payel, we're telling him, you do whatever you need to do to make sure that this belongs to the guy. We don't care what type of kinyan he uses. We don't care what type of method, halachic, lumdus he uses to get rid of the chametz. We just want him to have the power of attorney to do whatever he needs. Rav Moshe in a tshuva explains another reason why we want a bezin to sell our chametz is because there's a problem that the guy often doesn't really know exactly what he's buying. Now, often there's hundreds of contracts, or at least there's tens, if not hundreds, maybe thousands of contracts, depending on Rabbanim doing it together. You can have lots of details going on. Now, he's not going to sit there and start evaluating each and every contract, see how much everybody's selling and what everyone's worth. But without going into all details, Allah is in Chayshe Mishpat, when you have a Bezdin or 3 people together selling something, so even if the person doesn't know fully what he's buying, he's confident that since there's an enterprise, there's a body of at least 3 or more people selling him this, that they have some way of properly figuring out how much chametz there is. It doesn't mean that the Rav even knows how much chametz he's selling, but since it's not just working as an individual, but it's working as more of an enterprise, more of a corporation selling the chametz, so he's confident that the corporation selling him all those chametz, now the Bezdin, so to speak, will have the ability to figure out or hire a person who's able to figure out how to properly evaluate the chametz. That's just a maila, it's a chumrah to do it as a group of rabbanim as opposed to doing it as an individual rav, which is what they do here, they do it as a group. Okay, let's cover now quickly many of the kinyan that the Mishnah Berurah writes. This is on source 4, part 4, on page number 3, what we should do, how the rav should sell the chametz to a guy. Now keep in mind, again, we as an average consumer never see this. The Rav, though, I've witnessed to a couple of different Rabbanim selling chametz. They do almost all this. Some do even more, we'll speak out. And this, you'll see why it's much easier for the rabbi to do it than for each individual to do it, because it's just a lot of details. Okay, so this is the Mishnah Berurah. I paraphrase a lot of it. It's not everything. The Mishnah Berurah even writes even more than this. But these are the main points of the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Pesach. He says as follows. It's a machlokes. We're all familiar throughout Shas. It's all different types of kinyonim. We have hagbah, we lift things, we do meshicha, we do chalipin, we do kinyon agav, we do kinyon kesef. All these words are all over Shas. Now, although these are all different types of kinyonim, what becomes even more complicated is that each one has a machlokes of if and how it can be done between a yid and a yid only, or between a yid and a guy, or maybe it can only be done between a guy and a guy. All different shaylas and machlokes. And I'm going to try just to sum it up and get the brief version, and we can discuss it maybe at more length a different time. Like this. The Gemara discusses, and Mishnah Kedushin discusses, that metaltalin, any movable item, meaning not something which is the ground, the karka, that requires a physical action to transfer possession. So you need either meshicha to pull it, or you need hagbah to lift it up. Money, just giving money, according to the Mishnah and Kedushin, does not suffice, it's not good enough for metaltalin. That's ma'is enum kainis. Doesn't just work by itself. However, the Gemara has a machlokes if this is the same halacha for a yid to a goy, or this halacha only applies for a yid to a yid, like I mentioned before. According to Rabbi Yechanan, the proper method of the transaction between a yid and a goy is a physical transfer of an item like meshicha or hagbah, depending what it is. Reish Lakish holds that no, even over here, for a yid to a goy, you could use just money, even though for a yid you can't, but for a goy you could, and reasons why we're not going to discuss it right now. And Machlekes Rishayim had a pask in this. So again, we have a Machlekes in the Gemara, if you have a transaction between a Yid and a Goy, if you need to do Mashiach or a Hagbah and Metatlin, or money suffices. So what are we selling to the Goy? We're selling him Chametz, to Metatlin, movable items. How is the Goy supposed to go ahead and pick up or pull all this Chametz? It's a lot of work, right? Okay, so first of all, the first thing we're going to do is Kinyan Kesef. Because since it's a Machlekes, if a Goy can do Kesef or not, the first Kinyan, the easiest one, is a Goy will give money to the Rav. Now, how much money does he have to give? That's a good question. The Rav, let's say, will say, I have approximately $1 million worth of Chametz. Now, most Goyim who are buying Chametz don't really have $1 million to their name, which is another shah we'll get to. Even if they do, they're not coming with $1 million cash in a suitcase to give to the Rav. So they give a down payment, $5, $20, whatever it is, and they say, I'm buying, we agree now, you're going to sell me everything. There's no stipulation. I'm giving you all this, the money now, I'm giving you $20 to buy the Chametz now, and the rest of the money I owe you, which is, whatever it was, $1 million, what's million minus 20, right? Figure out the math, 900,000, etc. Right? 999, fine, right? All the rest of it, I'm having myself, I'm obligating myself in a loan that I have 8 days to pay back, or 9 days to pay back that loan. If I don't pay back that loan, then I'm going to be forced to sell it back to you for this money. But not that retroactive sale never happened, because that would be disastrous. We don't want the retroactive sale never to happen. We want the sale to be 100% valid. So we call it Zoykev Lav Milva. He accepts the rest of it upon himself as a loan. It's like taking like a mortgage, right? When you go and you buy a house, you give a down payment and the rest of it you own. Who owns the house now? Well, you own the house. The bank owns the house. Whatever. Okay, let's get Toteco. I don't know exactly compared to a mortgage, but the idea, in theory, that idea that you own, the guy will own the Chametz completely, and he has X amount of time to pay it out. So that's the first thing I put in bold in the Mishnah Berurah. Yesh Misha Oimer, says the Mishnah Berurah, the Kinyan Yishal Akam Hu B'Kesef Dafka, has to be specifically with cash. V'yesh Oimer, She'ein Akam Koyin El B'Mashicha, the Rishus Oyal Akbah, he has to do something physical. So in the older days, so to speak, before the Rabbanim did it for us, that was easy. You just went to the guy with your box, gave the box of Chametz to the guy. The guy could take it into his house and pick it up and push it and do whatever he wants with it. But nowadays, obviously, that's not really going to be an option. So we're going to have to figure out another way how to do it. V'yesha kasvu, in the third line over here, the gam shari kinyan no hagim alkim. Any kinyan that we discussed in the Gemara could work with the guy. Kigayin, kinyas metaltan agav karka. A kinyan agav. What that is, which when the Rabbanim do that as well, is that they sell the chametz to a goy, now even though it's metaltlin, but they do it agav karka. That's why in the shtar it says that with the sale, the goy is buying part of our house. He's buying the cabinet which has the chametz in. Not just buying the chametz, he's buying the physical cabinet which has the chametz. He's buying the pantry. He's buying whatever the chametz might be, the freezer that has the chametz. He's not just, therefore, when you buy something which is ground-based, like a cabinet, which is installed in the ground, the refrigerator and freezer, even though it's not installed, that's considered to be like the karka. It's heavy in the house. So he's buying that spot, that karka as well. So when you have a kinyan on karka, agav the karka, you can also get metaltlin. Although we said before, in order to be kind of metaltlin, you have to do a physical act. When you're doing it agav the karka, so that works. Or kinyan chatzor, or kinyan chalipin, you could do the chalipin, the exchange as well with the handkerchief, with the guy. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, where it's bold again, about halfway down, v'yeshma fakfakim b'kinyan melu, there are those paiskim who say these kinyan are not good. Even though you read the kisif kinyan kesef, potentially a Mashicha, and you did a Kenyan Agap, and you did a Kenyan Chalipin, that's at least already three or four Kenyan that you did already, but some Paiskim, again, the Mishmur is writing just Bekitzer, say these are not good, because maybe they only help for a Jew, and therefore the Mishmur says, L'inyan Dina, how do we Paskin? L'chatchila b'vadai tzarech l'haklis b'kinyan gomor or muskim l'kuli yalma, d'hainu, you have to do the best Kenyan which we could, b'kesef u'b'mashicha b'yachat. Mishmur says, you gotta do Kesef and Mashicha. So that's not gonna help us, because again, the Rav's doing it for us. The Rav selling everybody in the whole town's chametz, how can it, the guy can't do Mashiach on everybody's chametz. If it's just a single sale, you could do it. Mishmur says, but yeah, but it's good. But then go down, skip down to the next paragraph, and Mishmur says there as follows. Mikomakim, where it's bolded in the second paragraph. Ima chametz merubah, if there's an abundance of chametz, the efsha limshecha chametz kulin, the guy cannot pull all the chametz, v'chein and eina chametz kan shiach lakal l'mashcha, or the Rav's in his office, or he's selling it, the chametz from the guy in his house. So the Rav doesn't have any of the chametz there anyway. Elohu be'ir acheres, or a different city, or b'derech, yesh le lahaknois lenochi b'shar kinyonim. Then you should use an other kinyonim. And then he writes, oh yeah, bolded again, I did kias kaf, which they do, which is like a handshake. Since that's an accepted form of an agreement in Chayshah Mishpat, or in the business, when you do a transaction with somebody, you want to sign on a deal, you give a formal handshake, that has legal binding power, Or if you're in the diamond business, what do you say? Mazel bracha. That's a legal. It's a legal term that even amongst goyim, if you say that, it has a legal status. So any kinyan, which is an accepted way, a form of transferring ownership in a business practice, will do that. The hainu shemakim kapeim zelzeh. You clap hands together. V'chein kol kiyotziv zeh mishmuah, says later where it's bolded. Kol malka malkum fi min haga asoichim. Okay, that's considered a kinyan. Okay, so let's sum up. We discussed very quickly a bunch of kinyanim. This is what the rabbanim do l'maisa. They sell the chametz to the guy with kesef. The guy gives money. They write up a shtar. That's a kinyan shtar. The mishmuah didn't discuss it here. He writes it. It could be I just didn't read it. I didn't bold it up, but it's there somewhere. Shtar. They do chalipin. They do kinyan agav. They do tkiyas kap. Those are five kinyanim that they all do. That the mishmuah passes all rabbanim should do. As far as I know, that's universally accepted. Rabbi Greenblatt told me, and I saw Rabbi Shlomo Zalman did this as well in Eretz Yisrael. They also do another kinyan called kinyan idisa, which is an interesting kinyan. That's a kinyan which also works. It's better. There's a bezin that does it. That they get up and they tell the guy, the chametz that we have, buy this over now because we are appointed agents, is now yours. I mean, a kinyan usually is I'm taking this something physical, I'm taking this pen, and I'm giving it to you. You're doing mashiach on it, or doing hagbah, whatever you're doing on it. Disa kinyan, Taisis talks about this at a couple places, and there's all types of lumdas how it works. I have the ability to say, this pen now belongs to Hirschheim. Now, how'd that work? That's a lumdas. That's a concise, you discuss how that works. That's called a kinyan idisa. And if I just put it down in front of him and I say, this pen, everyone knows this pen was mine a minute ago, and I say, this pen hereby now belongs to Hirschheim, as long as it's a schus for him. If it's a chay for him, then obviously I can't force it upon him. But if it's a schus for him, that's called a kinyan idisa. That's a sixth king they do as well. And then they declare hefker bezdin hefker. So that's the seventh way that the bezdin has, or the rabbanim together, have got rid of our chametz. Now, we mentioned briefly before, there's a slight issue with this, because we sold, let's say, $1 million worth of chametz to the guy. And the guy doesn't have $1 million to his name. So I didn't put it in here, but there are many places, Shulchan Aruch Harav and others, who discuss an idea of getting an Arev Kablon, getting a guarantor on the loan that can guarantee that the money will be available. This could be a yid. You can take someone in town who either has money available or has the ability to get a loan for that amount of money. You don't have to actually have $1 million cash. You can just have the ability to get a loan, and you will sign as an arev, as a guarantor on the loan. So you have your local akum, your local guy, who can't get a loan for more than $500, and he's going to buy your chametz worth $1 million. How's that going to work? So he gives us $5 as his down payment, or $20, whatever it is. And then you have someone who has the ability, the yicholus, to get that money if the guy decides to buy it. He's guaranteeing that he will supply the money for the guy if the guy decides to buy the chametz. Now, you know, that's also not, I wouldn't say it's the best, wisest investment necessarily if the guy can't get a loan for more than $500. But that's the idea that you can, that arev, again, that could be a yid. There's nothing to do with that. You don't need a guy for that. As long as the guy is buying the chametz, then you should get a guarantor. And I'm pretty sure they do that here as well, because Rabbi Landa, who's involved in the selling of the chametz, I think he's makbid on that. Many chassidim are makbid on that. Okay, so now.
So it's not the whole best thing that goes to sell to the guy. It's somebody who represents the best thing?
Somebody, one more time. The
he represents the best thing when he comes to sell.
Well, the Rav, the Rabbanim are doing it as a Bezdin. So you have a Greenblatt, Rabbi Lander, Rabbi Shulman Olsen.
The Bezdin meets with
the guy, yeah. And they sell, they're working as a team, selling it, each one is selling their chametz together to the guy. With the power of a Bezdin. Now, if we would stop right here, so it sounds like
three separate transactions. Each Rav.
I don't know how they might all group it together. I'm not sure exactly at the end of the day how they do it. If they each, they say, well, doing it all, we're doing it all at once, we're going to do each congregation separately, I'm not sure. Well, right. They put all the stars together, so they make it one. They don't do three separate ones. Okay, fine. Okay, good. Different. Yeah.
One transaction.
Right, one transaction. Okay, good. If we would stop right now, it seemed like mechiras chametz is 100% valid. The Shulchan Aruch says you can do it. Mishmuah speaks about all the different kinyanim. You do all the kinyanim. It's valid, and then we can live happily ever after. However, that would be only telling you half the story. Many paiskim, and leading them are the Bechor Shar. I didn't quote it down here, but I'll just speak it out. There's the Bechor Shar, who was from the Gedalia Achronim on the Gemara Pesachim, and he raises many issues with this sale, the way we do it today. The main primary issue he has, although he doesn't quote the Ritva that we said earlier, but the primary issue he raises is that the whole thing looks like a harama. If we're doing this year after year, it looks like a joke, it looks like a trick. What are we doing? Every year we get the same guy. There's a video online you can watch of a Willig from YU in the Rav in Riverdale, He has a whole video of him selling the chametz to the guy, and he gives a whole introduction. He's been doing it with the same guy for like 45 years, something like that. A tremendous, over 40 years doing it with the guy. So it's very nice. It's good. He has a good relationship. But according to the Ritva, and according to the Bukhar Shar, that for sure looks like a harama, looks like a trick, because the guy knows, he knows he's been doing this for 40 plus years, he's all proud of it, he's smiling for all the pictures, this is what he does every year to help out the Jewish community, it's very nice, and he gets some business from it, he's a real estate agent, so afterwards he gets some business, you know, it's a whole, but according to many Paiskim, that would seemingly be a problem of harama. Now, Chasra, I'm not questioning that sale is 100% fully valid, or really is a very, very chashvarav, and that's 100% fully valid sale. I'm just saying, according to these Paiskim, it should, you can understand why it's a question. And therefore, the Bukhar Shar and many people, the Achrayim, who go with him, say there will be a serious problem selling it. He's actually discussing an interesting case where, in his day, 200, 300 years ago, many Jews had many livestock, they had many animals in their possession. And the animals, that wasn't just one cat or one dog or two cats, whatever it was. There was a whole flock of sheep or cows. And whatever they needed to eat, some of them needed to eat chametz products. And if they would be off their grain products for a week, they would really have a hard time. They wouldn't be producing what they needed to produce, and it would be the farmers had a very difficult time. So many farmers were stuck, and they would sell their animals with enough food for 8 days to a guy. And that was what the Paiskim really were bothered with in that day. That looks very not kosher, that here I'm selling you my cow, and I'm selling you enough food for 8 days, and I'll see you in a week. Like, you know, again, like we said before, you have to be very careful not to put in stipulations and add any conditions into the sale, because that would give it a chashash of a haram, or maybe even invalidate the whole sale. However, we're going to now focus on the paiskim that promote the sale. And it's an interesting question here, and the Chassam Sofer discussed this in his tshuva, and I think this is a question we can relate to, is that there was a shot, well, not exactly these details, but that the concept. Is that in the days of Baruch Frankel, who was a little bit before the Chassam Sofer, he had a shaila as follows. There was a malshin in town, someone who was a Jew, but unfortunately was constantly telling the government on his fellow brethren. Wasn't anybody's friend. And he goes to the governor before Pesach and says, let me tell you what the Jews are doing. The Jews are selling tons and tons and tons of chametz, a million ruble worth of chametz, and no one's paying sales tax. You see what's going on over here? The Jews are out to get you. They're all evading taxes, tax evasion 101. They're selling $1 million worth of chametz, and no one's paying sales tax. So the governor says, I gotta look into this. He looks into it and says, no big deal. A couple days later, he says, who cares? The whole thing is just a religious charade, has no validity anyway. What's the difference? I'll let the Jews go this time. I'm not gonna bother the Jews. So now, okay, the Jews, everyone could, you know, sigh of relief, right? We don't have to pay tax. But now everyone's nervous. So was the sale valid or not? If the governor is saying that the sale is just a religious thing, it's just a charade, so that would seem to imply that the sale has no validity halachically. If it's not a valid sale, then how can we be confident that the guy owns the chametz? Because even the government is saying, we don't care about it. So Chassam Sofer says, don't worry, calm down, everything is kosher. Why? And that's in the second paragraph here. He says, Ulevavi loy kein yidam. I'm not so concerned, my heart is not so worried about this. Ki ashtar kosher. The shtar is valid. Hein bedin Yisrael in Jewish court in Bahagala Haitzi Mechai Bedayanim Arehu Shaloi Hein bedin Isav Hetter. Whether any court, as long as the contract was written properly, the shtar is valid. Elab, rather, he says, Shaz kishi yitvenu bedi Isav Hetter bedar kai shalahem tzorach l'sham tchilash temple. Meaning, okay, right now the governor is saying that right now the guy bought all the chametz, and it's a religious observance thing, whatever you want to call it, the religious exemption, I don't know what you call it, right? It's just a religious event. But if the guy's going to actually go in and cash in on the deal and want to go ahead and take my Cheerios, take my macaroni, take my schnapps, then the court will say, oh, you actually bought it. You have to pay sales tax. Meaning, at this point, the Chassam Sofer is saying, of course, it's 100% sold and it's valid, the sale, the Chassam Sofer is saying. The only thing when the governor is saying that, oh, just religious things, because at this point, until the guy actually takes it into his house and takes it into his rishus and gets 2,000% bialis on it, then the government won't view it as a sale that needs sales tax. But if the guy would actually come in and take the bottle of whiskey, if he'd come and take the bread out of my freezer, then the government would say, of course, it was a valid sale and they have to pay sales tax. And therefore, the Chassam Sofer says, we don't have to be worried about the validity of the sale. And this is how most Paiskim accept this Chassam Sofer and other Paiskim who say similar ideas, that the sale is valid, even if you don't pay sales tax, and even if There's another concern. People said, oh, there's another concern. Some place can borrow. Let's say I'm renting an apartment. If I own my house, so like we said before, I could do kinyan agav, right? The guy is going to own part of my cabinet. And with that, buying my cabinet, he'll get the chametz. But let's say I rent my apartment. Part of my contract says, when you rent an apartment, usually I'm not allowed to sublet, right? I can't give out. I can't rent my apartment to somebody else. So how can I go ahead now before Pesach and sublet my apartment to the guy? Legally, that's illegal. How can I do that? But based on this Chassam Sefer, we could also explain, that's the place can explain, it's also mutter. Meaning, they only are makbid, the baladira, the owner of your apartment, doesn't want you to sublet and have someone else live in that apartment without your permission. But if you're subletting it for a religious reason, even though it's valid, but as long as the person doesn't move in yet, then they won't have any claim against you that you have done anything illegal. That's the place can just take this to another step. Let's move on now to the minig of many people not to sell chametz, actual chametz. And they kind of, hey, take this minig of selling chametz and they kind of play around with it a little bit. And this is the Vilna Gaon is recorded in section number 6 over here on the bottom of page 4 as having the following minig. And that's from Sefer Ma'aser Rav in Kuf Pei. The Vilna Gaon writes there, Shloi Limkor, the Talmidim of Vilna Gaon bring down, Shloi Limkor Shum Dvar Chametz. The Vilna Gaon did not sell any chametz. Kiyem Mechira Olamas. He sold, but he didn't own any chametz. He just did a mechira, so to speak, to be yaitzed. Just in case there was anything, maybe he had some stocks, I don't know, something he might have had, some crumbs, some whatever it was, but he sold, but he didn't really own, he didn't really sell any chametz that was be'en, any real chametz. And he continues here in Kuf Pei Aleph.
What does that word mean, olamis?
He did a olam, he just did a general sale, but he didn't really have any bread that he was selling. But he, nonetheless, he arranged a sale in case he has something he doesn't know where it is.
Does it mean for perpetual, like forever?
A final
sale, like?
Yeah, he would sell it.
No, it's here's.
Oh, I mean, right. I'm sorry. Right, he would sell if he had anything. Thank you. If he had anything real, he would sell the guy the bread and let him keep it forever. Meaning, oh, I have a loaf of bread. Do you want either you burnt it or you sell it to the guy? I'm sorry. Thank you. Right, and then after Pesach, right, achar Pesach, ein likach min hashuk, the Vilna Gaon would not buy from the marketplace. Masha oifin mikemach shay Yisrael umishamrim umishmorim v'yain sar v'sheichas Yisrael ki amechira garua. So the Goyin was makbid after Pesach not to buy from any Jewish flour that was owned over Pesach by a guy who sold back to a Jew. Meaning you'd only buy from a real guy after Pesach. You wouldn't go to the frum store, so to speak, and buy because they sold their chametz. He was makbid not only not to sell his own chametz, but he was makbid not to buy from any Yid who sold his chametz as well. This was the minig of the Vilna Goyin. And many Litvisha Olam, Yeshivish Olam, they want to adapt this meaning of the Vilna Gaon to the best of their ability. However, Shlomo Zalman is quoted as personally being strict on this custom, but he would not tell his Talmidim they have to do it. He wouldn't instruct it as a Harah L'Rabim. And there's a story brought down that in the Yeshiva, where he was Rosh Yeshiva in Kol Torah, they would sell the Chametz. And one year after Pesach, the boys came back and they made a Macha, because they knew the Rosh Yeshiva of Shlomo Zalman himself wouldn't sell chametz gamur, and the yeshiva did sell chametz, so they felt it was, it was a stira, and they said they're not going to eat that thing in Shabbos and yeshiva because the yeshiva's kitchen sold the chametz, and they're makbid, like the yeshiva's makbid. So the Rav Shlomo Zalman asked everybody from going home, of course, that everyone has to stay. He said it's a chumrah, and you cannot, mivat l'tayra, go home and miss yeshiva because of this chumrah. If you want to have your own personal haga in your own house, it's one thing, but he would not allow the bachrim to leave, and he allowed other people as well to sell their chametz. However, in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, which is the notes of Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita from a Salvechik, he brings down from a Salvechik of Boston was very makbid, and he also tells Talmidim that they should not sell chametz, or at least chametz gamur, before Pesach. They should not rely on it. They should either destroy it or sell it completely off to a guy. And it seems like the opinion of Rabbi Salvechik and his Talmidim is not to rely on the Mechira like the Vilna Gaon. However, Amisha Feinstein and the opinion of many other Paiskim, which is in the middle of the page over there, is Amisha's quote. This is from the notes of Shimon Eider. Yachal Limkar Lenochri Gam Chametz Be'en. You're allowed to sell Goy, the Chametz. And he brings down the footnote there. You look at that. It says, Amar Rabbeinu, Amisha used to say, if you don't sell chametz gomer to the guy, what are you selling? I mean, there are some people say you shouldn't sell chametz gomer, only sell things which aren't really chametz. And they would, people have all different types of minhagim when it comes to this thing. But Rabbi just said, I understand. If you're not selling chametz gomer to the guy, what are you selling him? Just seems to imply that he was pro the mechira. And that's many gedolei olam rely on this. Aruch Shulchan brings down something like this, and in In Lakewood, I know Rav Four Shimer Shlita, the big Paiskin Yeshiva, he allows and tells people that you're allowed to sell chametz. So again, although there is a valid minig, those are people who follow the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, not to sell chametz gomer, but the accepted practice of many is to yes sell chametz. And although the Vilna Gaon is recorded as not having bought things from a Yid who sold his chametz after Pesach, today many Paiskin say punkfaker, because you'd rather buy chametz that you know for sure was sold well than buy from a store which might come from a distributor of a Yid who's not from, who didn't sell his chametz. Meaning, if I went ahead and I buy from, let's say, a Frum supermarket in Brooklyn, right? I don't know, you know, you have all these Frum stores, pomegranates, right? They all buy a Frum Yid, right? Or what's it called? Moshe's Discount Supermarket, right? So I know that before chametz, he stocks up, before Pesach, he stocks up on all the chametz, and then he goes to the Rav, whoever gives the Hechsher in the store, and he arranges sale of the chametz. So I know for sure that this was sold properly, like all the kinyan that were done, and this chametz is sold, and I can eat it after Pesach. If I go to my regular ShopRite, or whatever, not ShopRite, not a good example, another big chain supermarket, Target, who might get to, is owned by a guy, but some of the distributors who distribute food to Target are owned by Jews, who are not yet religious, so they maybe didn't sell their chametz, so I'm running into a bigger problem. So just consult your local Orthodox rabbi, what's better practice Nageh halacha l'maisa today, because again, even if you think you're buying from a Goyish supermarket, you might be getting it, there might be a Jewish middleman over there who didn't sell his chametz. So it might be a maila to buy from a person who dafka did sell his chametz. Okay, there's an interesting Chassidish Shemaisa I want to do, end with before we get back to the original question, and that's from the Sefer Shari HaMoyadim, which is from the writings of the late Lubavitcher Rebbe. He brings down that his father-in-law told him, that's the Rebbe Rayatz, Yosef Yitzchak, that his father, the Marshab, Rabbi Shalom Ber, when he was a young child, the first time he went to Cheder, the Tzemach Tzedek was still alive, his grandfather, I think, right? His grandfather was still alive, and his grandfather gave him, when he went to Cheder, some candies, and told him, like, you know, like the Malachim are throwing sweets on you from Shemayim, and I'm giving you this is your first time learning Torah, it should be Zis, you know, it should be sweet, you're all different from Minhagim. You have an upshare and take a kid to learn for the first time and give him all types of candies. And the kid was so excited he got these candies from his grandfather, Tzemach Tzedek, such a tzaddik, he saved them. He wasn't going to eat them. You get a shirayim from the Rebbe, right? What are you going to save it? You want to treasure it, right? Right before Pesach, the Tzemach Tzedek calls him over, the Rebbe calls him over and says, my dear Einikel, did you eat the candies yet? The kid says, no. He says, you got to eat them before Pesach. That's the story. Ad kan maisa. Right? Now, what's the shaila? So that the Rebbe gave a whole shmooze on this maisa. All the halachas are from this maisa. The question was, why did he tell his Einikel to sell them? Because the minig in the Bible said, you do sell chametz. They don't have this minig of the Vilna Gaon not to sell chametz. So why did he tell him to sell them? So there's all different shitas back and forth. Bottom line, the way they explain the maisa, the reason why I told him not to sell it and I should eat it is because it would be a bazillion to sell something that the Rebbe gave you to a guy. How can you sell something which the Rebbe gave it to a guy? And if you sell it to a guy and you get it back afterwards, it loses its kedusha from the Rebbe. The whole point of Shirayim is that the Rebbe gave it to you. If a guy gets it, it's metame, it's in the middle. So Avadi, you can't sell it to a guy. You got to eat it before Pesach. So if you have any Shirayim in your house, make sure you don't sell it to a guy and you give it, you got to eat it before Pesach. Yeah. Well, give it to his father. Okay. Right. Okay. But in this case, we'll say the father owns it. Okay. The original shayla we start. What do we start with? The shayla Meshi was asked the shayla about, right, the guy had $1 million worth of schnapps, right, and he sells it to the guy before Pesach. He drops that on Chol HaMoed. The two sons are now fighting. The Bechor says, I want Pishnayim. And the second son says, you can't get Pishnayim, you can't get double because it's Roi, it's only coming afterwards, and you didn't own it during Pesach. So Shalom Meshev says, seemingly, at first glance, he didn't come to the shir, he didn't need to, but if he went through, yeah, he knew all these sources by himself, the Mechir is Chal. If you hold the Mechir is Chal, and all the Paiskim are agreeing the Mechir is valid, all the Kinyanim, Mechir is Chal, it should be that the Bechor loses. Here's the catch. Ready? Here's the $1 million catch. There's a Magen Avraham and a Taz that say that even if it's not spoken out, the Taz explains, the guy has no right to sell the chametz to any other yid after Pesach, except the yid that sold it to him first. Meaning like this. I sell Mr. Akum my schnapps before Pesach. I have a friend who really wants my schnapps. So he's going to wait, Matzei Pesach, by the door of the guy. The second Pesach is over, knock on the door and say, you have all that schnapps? Quick, I'll give you $1.5 million. Right? You know, he'll undercut me and buy it back from the guy before I have a chance to do it. So the Paiskim say, the Taz learns, you can't do that. If the guy decides not to keep the chametz, the guy wants to keep the chametz, like we said, of course, it's up to him. He can keep it and live happily ever after, pay it off, and he can enjoy it. But if he decides, for whatever reason, he wants to sell it back to the yid, then the yid who sold him is muchzik, has the right, doesn't own the chametz, because we don't want the yid to own the chametz, but the guy owns the chametz completely, but he has the legal right, shows some fancy term for it, to have first dibs back to get that chametz back. And since he's muchzik to get the chametz back, he has still some shaykhis to it, not in the sense that he owns it. Again, he doesn't own the chametz, but he has some level of a connection to it. The Sefer Shalom Eishev, he has a right to it, that perhaps you can say that that would be enough for the Bechor to get Pishnayim, and therefore he wanted a paskin that the Bechor in such a case would get Pishnayim, because he's a muchzik, the father was a muchzik to be the first one to get it back after Pesach, and no other yid could have bought it.
That's not Roy.
He has a right to that. You have to go through Tshuva. But
traditionally, you have a loan, but it's Roy.
I mean, like what? By what case? By a different.
You have a loan, right? And you have waiting for the loan to pay.
Come back. Well, yeah, because I don't know. I
mean, you can't be more mukhsak than that.
Well, okay, but I think, if I remember correctly, I think the difference over there is going to be is that it's not a question of someone else. It's not that someone else can't get it back. We don't know if it's going to. Meaning here. Okay, I got to think about it. I think. He speaks about that. Let me just answer the one more thing, one more point before we stop. Rabbi Yashiv, though, was hesitant to rely on his Pesach L'maisa. Hopefully, his child is never L'maisa. But Rabbi Yashiv said that this would go back into the category of what many Paiskim were upset with the Mechira in general of Harama. Even though we accept the Mechira and we allow it to be done and we promote everyone to do the Mechira to make sure that they, in case they own any Chametz, even if they don't think they own it, they should sell all the Chametz. Because you never know what you might have that you want to make sure is sold. But Rabbi Yashiv said, if we would give the Bechor Pishnayim, it would look very fishy, and it would look like the sale was never valid. Therefore, he would say that the Bechor should not get it. There's more rais as well to that, but that's the be machlokes. But again, according to Shalom Eishev, the original case, he paskin that it would be allowed for the Bechor to get Pishnayim. Okay, we'll stop here. I'll get back to you. Mir Tashem. Okay, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, just, yeah, all these 6 different kinyanim and everything, and... the guy is so not serious about it. We definitely want him to have the chametz, but this is a joke by him. It's definitely a joke, and that's not considered a good bechira.
Well,